When we share someone's story here on the Diaries, the episode might end, but their story doesn't. So many of the people we've talked to, they've gone on to do incredible things. They have epic adventures and make significant impacts in our community. Over on Diaries Plus, we're catching up with some of our former guests to see what they've been up to. I recently sat down with Connor Ryan, a Lakota professional skier from our Sacred Slopes episode, who's been knocking out groundbreaking projects ever since the episode aired. It's really incredible. We had a great discussion about the impacts he's made, what keeps his fire burning, and taking ski lessons as a pro skier. Here's a snippet of the conversation.
All the source of joy that I use to fill my cup to be out in the world doing positive things comes from my relationship to the outdoors. And so I really focused on like, wow, like there's so much power if I can give one person the relationship to the outdoors that I have through skiing. And maybe that will have as profound of an effect on them as it's had on me.
To listen to the full episode, use the link in the show notes to subscribe to Diaries Plus today. Yeah, you get more shows, but you also have a peace of mind of powering what's out there right now, keeping us moving forward, keeping this community together. So thank you for everyone who supported and everyone who's going to support. We appreciate it. Okay, Cordelia, I've got some questions. They're going to seem random at first, but I promise they have a point.
Okay.
How much is a gallon of gas in Colorado right now?
Like $2.21, I think.
Cool. And I don't know. What about a gallon of milk? Do you even drink? I don't know. No. If you drink milk, what? How much does a gallon of milk cost?
I drink almond milk like every other like crunchy, bougie hipster. I think. I don't know, like between $2 and $3, depending on the brand you get.
For your bougie almond milk.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a Netflix account?
I'm on my mom's.
Bradley, fair enough. This is the Dirtbag Diaries.
Loud and proud. Are we airing this?
I think my mom's on mine. It's kind of funny. Okay. How much does that cost? Do you know?
I think it's like $12, $13 a month, right?
It is something close to that, yes.
Uh-huh.
And those are things that in the last year during the pandemic, you've not gone without Netflix or almond milk, I'm sure. Is that correct?
Correct.
Why? Yes.
What are you going to tell me why you're asking me these questions?
Yeah. So I'm curious, what do you miss from the last year?
Everything that I can't have right now, which is people, I think. Just hanging out with people and having people over for dinner, going to see shows and singing with people. I mean, all the stuff that used to feel so easy but is so hard to access right now. Yeah.
And even the stuff that sort of, you know, we might be normally say like, you know, there's that term like the best thing in life are free, right? It's like those are the things that on a certain level we would say that about, right?
Like good conversations and friends over for dinner.
Yeah, good conversation and a hug from your mom. And you're like, you know, like that those things are simultaneously invaluable and free. It's just like weird. It's like the circle of commodities comes around on the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And you know, in our house, we buy a lot of cheese sticks. like a lot of string cheese sticks, like so many. It's just like one of those things I never thought I should have invested in a string cheese company before having children, because there's a lot of them. And, you know, it's funny because like I think, you know, I've been fortunate enough to make a living doing this podcast and, you know, other creative endeavors at Duct Tape Than Beer. And it's funny because like it's sort of this like I give a kid a cheese stick right before bed. They eat it. And it's funny because it's actually this weird measure, you know. I mean, that cheese stick is probably 49 cents or something, like let's say like that. But that cheese stick actually is a reflection of like the love and the effort and the energy that I put into this show. And it's this strange thing where if you were to be like, what's this community around the Diaries worth to you? I'd be like, it's invaluable, right? It's like, it's incredible. It's been, you know, one of the biggest adventures of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it could, if you chose to, be measured in cheese sticks, right? And it seems like today you have a show about that. So we've got a story about a climbing gym. Pretty cool place called Coral Cliffs, struggling like so many other small businesses through closures and lockdowns.
So often, the things in life we love the most, we say they're invaluable. But when this community faced losing its only climbing gym, they took a hard look at how much it was worth.
I'm Fitz Cahal.
I'm Cordelia Zars.
You're listening to the Dirtbag Diaries.
On March 20th, 2020, the governor of Florida issued an executive order that required all movie theaters, auditoriums, and fitness gyms in Broward County to close. Abby Dion is the owner of Coral Cliffs Climbing Gym in Fort Lauderdale, and she scrambled to figure out how she was going to pay her employees, rent, utilities, and bills for equipment, all without any income. She looked into applying for small business loans available at the time.
There was no clear, this is what y'all do. Like, even once you put in your paperwork to the banks, it was like, I mean, I had my bank have resend me two different forms because they're like, oh, they changed it again, or this is missing.
In early May, Abby did receive a small amount of government funding through the EIDL program, which helped her cover the last few months of overdue expenses. But in early June, she used all of that money up and again had no way to pay rent or her employees. Abby had to begin furloughing staff, and tensions with her landlord reached a breaking point.
I had no rights at that point. Technically, I was trespassing if we didn't come to an agreement.
It was either figure out a way to pay or close down the gym. Thanks to all of Abby's hard work over the past 10 years, Coral Cliffs had become a thriving and beloved community center in South Florida. We quickly spoke with a few longtime members.
Fell in love with everyone, with the space, with the vibe, with, you know, just came to it, just not really knowing that I was coming to find my community.
When you go there, everyone know each other. My girl Lila, everyone know, new hair, like all the climbers, you know, that they are more old than her. They will all come and say, oh, hi, oh, then we look at her.
Walked in, it was just super friendly. You walk in, everybody knows who you are. You know, you might be trying to boulder a route and, you know, randomly Abby or, you know, Liv.
First of all, I have a cerebral palsy. And so, you know, it's hard for me to like stand up and stuff. And, you know, it's. But you know what, ever since I joined his gym, I feel like I'm like a stronger, more centered and everything.
You'll go once or twice a week for your therapy session and make sure to talk to everyone. How are you dealing? How's it going? You know, what's going on with work? And
for us, Abby, she's not actually Lila coach. She's more like a family. A sister for me, an aunt for the girls, like a friend for my husband. She's not a coach.
It's the bar where everyone knows your name. It's that kind of environment.
That was Vanessa Flores, Yafit Gitterman, Mike Kelly, and Gabriella Nalvin, who all climbed at Coral Cliffs before COVID hit. Here's Abby again.
This is it. It's been a good run. No, but, and also, you know, let's be clear. It's been a good run, you know.
The idea of letting her community down tore at Abby's heart. But she looked back on all the relationships she'd built and tried to stay grateful.
I just knew I needed to like hunker down and then be at peace with whatever came through at the other end. If anything, my personal experience has shown me that it'll be fine. It might be super unpleasant. But not to sound nihilistic, but I'm not dead. You know, no one I care about is sick.
Abby tried to keep that perspective as she called her friend Anahid and told them, hey, I think this is over. Abby grew up in Montreal, where as a kid, she always found a way to get into the outdoors.
I always wanted the adrenaline side of things. So a walk was like a serious hike. Playing in the snow is like bulleting down the mountain in your sled, you know, with your three buddies in the back and hitting like moguls. And then like when you, and seeing how many kids can stay in the the sled. Yeah, that was us.
Even as a child, Abby figured out that playing outside was a way to bring people together. Regardless of race, background, or beliefs, Abby had always been the kid who said things like this.
I just want to play with everybody.
One day when Abby was in second grade, she and her friends were outside playing street hockey in early April. A reporter for the local newspaper stopped and asked them to describe what they wanted for Easter.
And all my buddies asked for, like, I want a chocolate Easter bunny the size of Montreal, and I want eggs. And I was like, for Easter, I would like peace between all races. I would like the Soviets to stop bugging our embassies. I can't remember all of it, but that is what I was saying.
I bet the reporter was just like,
what the hell? Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, peace between all races. Like, I've been thinking about this forever.
Years later, Abby moved to Florida to study mathematics and physical oceanography at the University of Miami. While she was in school, a couple of friends from Europe came to visit her. They had a climbing trip coming up, and they didn't want to lose their fitness during a Florida beach vacation.
And they found coral cliffs, and they were like, hey, we're going to this place. Would you like to come? We're going to climb. And I was like, that sounds like fun. I'll join you. And I did. This is what is embarrassing. I learned to climb in Florida. Climbing really didn't come to my consciousness until I came to the flattest state in the union. And then it was like an obvious choice.
At that time, coral cliffs offered super bare bones climbing, like no padding on the floor bare bones climbing. Eyes wide, Abby hopped on a wall.
I lost my mind, essentially. I took my class, I got my gear, I got my membership all in the same day. I climbed everything.
Climbing gave Abby a unique feeling.
In possession of my body, my breath, and my mind, and really present and strong. I felt really strong when I practiced it.
Abby immediately vibed with the community at Coral Cliffs, and she became a regular in no time.
Folks were always like, hey, do you need a catch? And how's it going? And also at the time, especially in Florida, like it wasn't cool. No one knew. When I would say to people, oh, I'm going climbing, they'd be like, where? You know, where can you do that here? The thought of it happening indoors wasn't even in the consciousness of the average person. In that sense, we were a band of misfits, you know, like we knew of this place together. And so it was a small crew.
For Abby, climbing immediately tapped into that desire she'd had as a kid, to just play with everyone. In Fort Lauderdale, everyone's from everywhere, and Abby felt welcome from day one.
It isn't gender-specific, it isn't age-specific, it really is. Like, it translates at every point in an individual's life.
Abby's climbing strength and technique improved. She started climbing outside, too, and deepened her connection to the sport on trips she took to Colorado and Kentucky. Coral Cliffs became a home, and climbing gave her a sense of belonging she never wanted to forget.
One day, my climbing partner, you know, whispered in my ear that the current owner was selling and that I should probably buy it. He was just like, do this thing. This is what you need to be doing with your life, kind of thing. And I was like,
Abby mulled over the idea for a few days and then had a conversation with the owner.
And I realized that for the love of the sport, the love of my community, at worst, you know, it floats along as it had. And at best, we can make a difference. I've always been the kind of person that when I like something, I want to share it. I usually say if I'm having a good time, everybody's having a good time because I look to share joy and climbing brought me a lot of joy.
In 2011, Abby went for it. She bought the business.
I didn't know any better, thank goodness, like really. I just valued my freedom and I valued the product. So I don't want to say I fell into it, but you know how people say you should love what you do and hopefully do what you love and apply yourself and have purpose and all of those things. You could see the ingredients of that happening for me with the purchase of the gym, but making sense of it was definitely overwhelming. And then let's just talk realities. There is no guidebook for business really, and even less in the climbing industry, especially a decade ago.
Abby's math degree gave her a leg up on the numbers, writing budgets and business plans, thinking analytically about how to create a sustainable product. In that first year, she spent 70 to 80 hours a week on her company, and she encountered a wide range of challenges.
How do I get the power turned on here? And or how do I open a bank account? Like super simple stuff to how do you handle the person who doesn't believe or recognize that you know what you're doing.
When she purchased the gym in 2011, Abby became the first queer Black woman to own a climbing gym in the U.S. She's 5'3", petite, and wiry.
I don't match up with the image of the mountaineer that folks have been exposed to. So you can imagine a 200-pound dude walks in the gym and is like, can you belay me? I'm like, yeah, I can belay you. You'll be fine.
In addition to setting up the business side of things, Abby spent a lot of time on the floor of her gym, belaying and instructing. She began to transform the gym into a fully equipped training facility, installing hang boards, a weight section, and the first tension wall in Florida. She launched a kids' competitive climbing program, a ladies' night, and one-on-one coaching sessions with the staff called Climb Time. She engaged the community in events like film screenings and fundraisers, and she created a new system of membership tiers so that more people could climb at an affordable rate, and her prices haven't changed in a decade. Everything Abby introduced into the space, from budgets to belay etiquette, stemmed from her personal philosophy of climbing.
There should be no friction in the system. Like, if someone wants to come and climb, they should be able to come and climb and work the thing. Visually, what comes to mind is, sounds terrible, but like an assembly line. Let me explain.
You're going to have to break that down for us.
Let me explain. You're getting some insights into how my brain works. I'm very, like I'm a real nerd, but I like systems. I like mechanisms. I like finding the principles that guide things because then they can take on different expressions. And that means I can own it, you can own it. You know, I can practice it in the ways that feel best to me. So the way I visualize it is, I don't want to call it hand-holding, but if someone comes through the door and they're like, oh, I just saw this movie and it was dope, you know, I want to climb. You know, from, I saw this in a magazine and I've been wanting to come for years. And like, I really get the gamut of people walking through the door. And so I imagine assembly line where, depending on where you're walking in, the culture that I have in this space is that you can take steps to progress. And it's really quite deliberate. Like many people, I've taken up gardening during quarantine, and you realize how the quality of the soil matters. Lower layer, mid layer, top layer, it feeds through. Yeah, it's an ecosystem, and I'm pleased what has grown in my ecosystem. I've spent more time worrying about the soil than anything else and not what I'm growing.
Abby's noticed people climb how they feel. And given that the sport requires a presence of mind, body, and emotion, she designed her gym to provide a holistic kind of training.
So helping folks come face to face with each challenge, whether it's the climb, whether it's the process, you know, the tools you use to get through stuff. And I think the beauty with climbing is that there are different ways to come at things. So I try to help people see that. And it's whether it's a 5'6 or a 5'12 or whatever. It doesn't matter the difficulty. And someone who climbs hard in my space gets encouraged and definitely gets, you know, fist bumps, but you don't get elevated in my space. It's not you're not a better person because you climb harder. which causes intermingling. Like no one, there is no class of cool kids in one corner, not so cool kids in another. Like if you come to Coral and you're on the wall, people will be like, yeah, good job, Cordelia, get it. And I didn't realize until I went to other spaces that I realized, wow, no one's talking to one another. There's no encouragement. For me, especially when I'm outside, just feeling the people I'm with, like cheering. It is a lot of times the difference between sending and not sending. Not even sending and forget sending. Making one more move. Holding on just a little bit longer. Trying just a little bit harder. And that injection of energy, I give it to the folks that come through the door. And, you know, I think it gets mimicked by my staff and by my members too.
In a nutshell, Abby's whole business motto boils down to a single phrase.
Be a nice person.
On June 30th, after scrambling to keep her business afloat for 3 months during a national shutdown, Abby called her close friend Anahid Sachi, a climber and rider from Vancouver. Anahid and Abby had met a few years back at Color the Crag Climbing Festival, and Anahid made frequent visits to Florida ever since. Abby kept in close touch with Anahid through the shutdown, as she juggled loans, furloughed employees, and navigated landlord relations. And through all of it, Abby had managed to reassure Anahid and her community that everything was going to be okay. Here's Anahid, who uses they-them pronouns.
I don't know, we're going to work this out. We're going to be fine. We're going to pivot. This is an opportunity to rebuild or take this somewhere else, or like a true entrepreneur in that sense. But I just remember like that phone call felt different. I felt that she was sort of teetering on the edge of like, just saying like, screw it. I can't do this anymore.
So I let them know. I was like, I think this might be it.
More after the break.
Calling all business owners out there.
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Our planet needs businesses to be better. Newsflash, right? There's a way we do that. One of the moments in our journey as a company that Becca and I are most proud of is the day we joined 1% for the Planet 14 years ago. We know we have an impact. It's undeniable, right? It's not someone else's problem, it's our problem. And we wanted to become a part of a global network of individuals, businesses, and environmental not-for-profits driving real impact. So every year there's a day where we sit down and we plan our giving. It starts with a donation, but we've been able to bolster that with in-kind donations. There's all sorts of ways to do this. Other companies give employee volunteer time, so there's a solution that's right for you. The biggest thing is it connects us with others who care and organizations going to bat for the values we believe in. And it makes us feel part of something bigger than our small company. So if you're a business owner, big or small, publicly traded, or not, there's room for you in this movement. Visit 1percentfortheplanet.org/dirtbagdiaries for more information. Be a part of this. We may have more than one career, but there is only one planet. 1% for the planet.
So I let them know. I was like, I think this might be it. I was at peace. And I was just like, this is what's going on. I just want to tell you.
I started ignoring her. And I didn't listen to a thing she said for maybe like 15 or 20 minutes. And I just like used the privilege that I have in my ability to word things. And I wrote up a GoFundMe page. And then I was just going to publish it and not tell her. And then I thought, maybe that's not a good idea because she'll definitely find out. And then she will not be very pleased.
And to all of you out there who are not so attuned to talking about your feelings, when it's a little disorienting when you do, and then the person you're doing it with is like typing furiously on their keyboard. You know, you're like, what the heck? And that's what I did. I was like, what are you doing?
This person is just shouldering so much more than they should be shouldering right now. And like, we need that space. The community benefits from that space. Like, they need to know.
Anyone who knows me knows, you know, I move pretty solo. Like, I've had to cut through some brush. So I'm used to getting after things by myself. So I don't necessarily burden. I don't necessarily, you know, ask for help. I usually find a solution.
Anahid set the GoFundMe goal at $25,000, which would cover the rent Abby had missed since the onset of the pandemic. Then they contacted a list of Abby's closest friends, mentors, and advocates and said, "Help me get the word out. We have to save Coral Cliffs." And did it ever cross your mind to ask for money from your community?
No. 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 Not at all.
At the end of their phone call, Anahid had posted a GoFundMe. Abby didn't know quite what to make of that, but said, "Whatever you do, just leave me out of it. I'm exhausted."
I was like, "I'm going to garden. I'm going to do a peaceful act, a nourishing and peaceful act. So I'm going to garden and play with dirt and grow something because I like to grow things. That's just my nature." So I was like, "Let's grow something small."
Meanwhile, Anahid stayed awake at their computer and watched the donations begin to roll in. The next afternoon, Abby got a text from one of her members.
"Dude, by tonight, for sure, 18. I'm like, "What are you talking about? 18 what?" is what I texted back. 18 what? And he just like, all caps, LOL, LOL.
That 18 meant $18,000. By the end of the first 24 hours, they'd hit their initial goal of 25K.
So I was like, "We got our rent paid." Phase two, within 24 hours, was like, "Let's double that and make sure Abby has some resources for the rest of this pandemic, which is indefinite."
I had spent all of these years giving, 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 and never asking. And they were like, "So it's funny, you should, you know, hey, everybody, we're going to do this thing where we're going to ask for Abby." And that's what they did.
Abby was gardening the entire time, quite literally in the soil in the front of her house, planting a garden, and nothing could have been better, honestly, even just as a metaphor.
Within 72 hours, a total of 4,000 people contributed to raising $120,000 to save Coral Cliffs. The gym was going to be okay. Following the fundraiser, Abby was able to pay her rent in full. She rehired all of her staff and got to work repairing the gym after several months of dormancy. She drafted a COVID policy requiring masks and limiting climb time to 2 hours. And on November 14th, 2020, Coral Cliffs reopened. I asked Abby what it felt like to witness her community rally behind her.
Obviously, all sorts of emotions, but the main ones are obviously gratitude and just absolute humility. Just, I mean, even though it's in the form of money, it is an act of love. People showed up, and that's just it. You matter. That is the message I've been trying to communicate in the gym. When someone comes in and is climbing, it's you matter. This is great. It's progress. It's growth. It's phenomenal. Keep going. And the GoFundMe is all of that on steroids.
Today, Coral Cliffs has been open for a little over 2 months. Abby has seen her membership numbers gradually rise again, and she's back in the soil of her gym, creating new programming with a bigger emphasis on education this spring.
I want your membership to include an assessment from a physical therapist, a conversation about your body, get to know your body, not just when you're on the wall. Mobility, not just yoga, teaching folks how to route set. It's like choreography, making hold, like climbing movement, strength, all the other usual trimmings. It really is offering someone you belong.
Abby's push to develop new programming ties directly back to the lessons she learned last summer.
What the experience of this past year has shown me is that my creating a place and space that offers care for folks and their learning and their growth is much more important than how big your space is, how tall your walls are. I'm going to double down on that some more. Experiences like the GoFundMe show me that what I'm offering is good, and I need to do more of it. It's okay to ask for what you need. It's not just okay, it's important to ask for what you need.
On our last call, Abby FaceTimed me into the view of her garden. The seeds she planted last summer during the GoFundMe have grown into beautiful eggplants and peppers and a mountain of herbs. For now, she's letting the soil rest and enjoying the fruits of her love and care.
I think it's beaten out of us, but really it is give, give, and then take or receive. That is how this works.
We're doing the credits on a chairlift. Is it a powder day?
Yeah.
A little more enthusiasm. Is it a powder day?
Yeah!
It is. Okay.
Well, it's kinda.
Our stories come from friends of friends, and from you, our community, which is how we got this one. If you have a compelling idea for a guest or a story lead, please give us a shout. You can use the submission form on our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. Music today from Kai Engel, Ken Christensen, Jay Blanked, Jazar, Little Glass Men, Brendan O'Connell. The tracks are courtesy of the Artists or Free Music Archive. Jacob Bain and Nice Koto composed our theme song, Still Dope. You can find the links to the artists at our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. This episode was produced by Cordelia Zars and edited by Becca Cahal, illustration by Walker Cahal, graphics by Anya Miller. Becca Cahal is our executive producer. I'm Fitz Cahal. I've got some powder to ski. You've been listening to the Dirtbag Diaries. So everyone say thanks for tuning in together.
Thanks for tuning in together.
No, at the same time. One more time. One, two, three.
Thanks for tuning in together.
Don't say together. Just say thanks for tuning in.
Okay.
I'll count. One, two, three.
Thanks for tuning in.